Thank you, Tony. Thank you, buddy. Yeah, you guys are laughing now. You're going to learn what acquired taste really means. You're going to understand what that's all about. My name's Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the South Dixie Group from Miami, Florida. Actually, it's South Dixie Zoom Group from Miami, Florida. I go to a lot of Zoom meetings. I also go to a lot of regular meetings. I also do a lot of other things that I may or may not go into. And it's good to be here. I'm in my 45th year of sobriety. And let me see. I haven't found necessarily have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. So it's good to be here. It's a privilege to be here. I was on 84th annual, whatever, it like started right before the big book was written or something. I don't know what was going on here. It's a long time ago. So it's good to be here. And so I always have this question in my mind. Unfortunately for you, the question has been resolved. Well, by the way, you've cleared up a mystery. Because whenever I'm invited to do one of these things, I was just in Montreal doing a thing for them, and I caught a cold. So if I cough and hack or something like that, that's the deal. So I thought it'd be done by now, but I'm supposed to go to Winnipeg in 2 months. So I called him up on the phone. I said, "So what's the weather like there?" And he said, "The high. And I mean, what's the rain?" He says, "Zero." I said, "No, you didn't understand. I was asking about the weather. Could you give me a number?" He says, "Zero. 15 below to zero." I'm looking for something down south. I don't know. So whenever I get called to do something like this, I always assume that the reason I'm being called is because they actually have not listened to the tapes. You know what I mean? So I'm glad you cleared that up. So I'm going to tell you a few things, and I've been around for a little while, and I've learned a few things. You know, it's like that farmer's commercial. You have that farmer's commercial here with the bald guy, you know, he says, "We know a few things, we've learned a few things, so we know a few things," or something like that. So I've learned a few things in the last 45 years. And my lovely wife is here, there she is, that gorgeous lady. You know, can you stand up, please? I'm doing this. She's a member of our Ladies of Perpetual Revenge, Al-Anon, you know, she who must be obeyed. And I want to make sure she hears everything that's going on so she can critique me. It looks like I'm asking her to critique me, but she's going to critique me no matter what. Yeah, I just want you to know that. I'm going to do something wrong. It's okay. I'm prepared. I know how to say you're right. And that's it. That's the end of that conversation. So my sponsor said, "Don't make any major moves during your first year of sobriety." So we got married after I had 3 months. And now we have 4 kids and 8 grandkids. It's too late now. What can I say? It's all over. So I'm gonna say. So I was gonna do one of the things that I have, because I'm an alcoholic. You understand? If you don't think so, you'll learn a little bit more about me. Is, you know, so I always have this thing in my mind, this little thing in my mind. It used to be a big thing. Now it's a microscopic thing. Do I tell them what I think they want to hear, so that they'll like me? Or do I tell them the truth? So you know that promise in the book that says fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave you? I'm not scared anymore of y'all. So you'll probably get the truth. I don't know whether you get the entire whole truth, you know what I mean? Because I'm mindful you don't know me, and I am an acquired taste, you know what I mean? But I would feel not good about myself if I lied or didn't tell you the truth about some things which could possibly save your life, because I was worried about what you might think about me, because that would be selfish. So because when you're in for about 40 years, 45 years, what you see is you see the thousands and gazillions of people. Like, hey, works so well, you know. And this, you go to conventions, 5 conventions, see 50,000 people. You say, "Man, this thing really works." you get a new perspective. You know, how we get different perspectives by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. And I hit a hard bottom, but you want to know something? You get to hit mini bottoms and micro bottoms all along the way. God isn't done with me, you know? And somehow this is sort of like when they get a shot from learning about life and about who you are. It's like going to the doctor where he says, he takes out the needle, he says, you're going to feel a pinch and then the medicine. And you know, the way this thing works is you're going to feel a pinch. You're going to have some things happen to you. So I'm going to just talk about a couple of things. I was going to do my speech, my world famous speech, if I might say, on humility. But unfortunately, I never do it with a crowd this small. So we'll pass on that. It's just the way it is. I'm sorry. Just the way that's the rules, you know. So I almost bought, just happened the other day, so I think the Lord wants me to tell you, I almost bought an alcoholic dog, an alky dog. It was unbelievable. I don't know whether any of you guys own an alky dog. I almost got, it was like, you know, when these things pop up in my life, I said, I must have to talk about it. Oh, thank you. God bless you. I appreciate it. So I was driving down the street, and not far from my house in Palmetto Bay, and there's this guy sitting there with a sign, talking dog, $10. I'm not kidding you, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know what you would have done, but I stopped the car. I mean, we have a dog, but we don't have a talking dog, and I thought it was a bunch of crap, you know what I mean? But I stopped and I said, you got a dog back there? He says, yeah. He says, yeah, his name's Max. I said, he's a talking dog? He says, yeah, he talks. I said, can I see him? Can I talk to him? He says, yeah, he's in the back, just going back. He's a little cage back there. So I walk back, and there's this little mongrel sort of like old dog sitting in the back, and I walk up to him, and he's just sort of sitting there, lying there. He must be like old dog, you know. He says, so I said, are you the talking, you're Max, the talking dog? He says, yeah, I'm Max. Said, I didn't laugh. I want to tell you something. Didn't laugh at all. You know, it seems funny now. So I said, you talk? He said, yeah, I talk. I've been talking ever since I'm a pup. And I said, this is like amazing. He says, yeah, yeah. He says, so what's your story? He says, well, he says, I started off working for really military intelligence. And I was stationed in, I had a handler in Moscow. And what happened was my owner at that time was a member of the Politburo or whatever the deal is over there, and he used to go to all the meetings, and nobody ever minded in the Kremlin. Nobody minded because I'm a dog, you know. And then I would go back and I'd be debriefed by my handler, and I did that for about 10 years working in Moscow. And then they brought me back home, and when they brought back home, I went to work privately for like Monsanto doing industrial espionage, and he had another guy who worked for Monsanto, and they brought worked for Dow, and he would bring him into the Dow stuff and 3M, and they report back. He did that for 10 years, and he says, and now I'm retired. I said, this is amazing. You ought to do a movie. He says, yeah, they're going to do a movie, and I've been talking to Steve Spielberg and all that stuff. They're going to do a movie on this deal, and now I'm just, you know, I'm just relaxing and everything, and I'm retired, and that's the deal. He says, well, you know, I stopped because I told your owner that, you know, I have a house right down the street. We have a big yard. We already have a dog. You know, we got 8 grandkids. We got everybody. We love dogs. He said that maybe, you know, if you wanted to, you know, you come over and you live with us, and you'd be with. He says, yeah, sure, that's fine. No, I have no problem with that. I said, well, that's great. So I go up and I talk to the guy who was sitting there, and I said, well, I talked to Max. I said, yeah. He said, so let me ask him. I want to buy him. How much does it cost to buy him? And he says, can't you read the sign? I said, yeah. He says, talking dog, $10. I said, dog talks. He said, yeah. He says, you're gonna sell a talking dog for $10? He said, hey, he's a liar. He never did any of that crap. I didn't buy him, you know. Who wants another alcoholic dog, you know what I mean? Unbelievable. I've read a lot of books. You know, the big book, the 12 and 12, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, Bill Wilson's last essay, Emotional Sobriety, the Next Frontier. I'm pretty good, and I've been educated far beyond my capacity to understand anything. I was going for my, I graduated departmental honors in mathematics, so I was going for my PhD in algebraic topology, and ended up being a lawyer and a division chief in one of the largest prosecution firms, working for Janet Reno, our former attorney general, and stuff like that, doing major crimes. You know, so I'm not a stupid guy. Well, I actually am a stupid guy, but I mean, I'm well credentialed, I'll put it that way, you know. And if you look at my life, you'd have to say, that guy must be stupid, you know. And so the thing is, I've gone to all the meetings, all the deals, you know, did all the steps, taught the steps, still do teach the steps down there. We have things called step series, where for a group you'll do 12 weeks in a row, and I'll speak for 12 weeks in a row on different steps and on different topics and things like that, sort of like workshops. You know, sponsors everything that moves, Intergroup Banquet Chairman for 2 years in a row, you know, brought down Clancy and Johnny Harrison. And all the stuff that we do, you know, gladly, and I go to 3 Zoom meetings a day, one at 7 a.m. in the morning. I'm just telling you about myself because it's going to lead up to some 7 a.m. in the morning, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and 5:30, and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I do that almost every day except for on Fridays at 4 o'clock. Fridays at 7 o'clock. We have a 4-hour meeting. It's a scripture-friendly meeting. And then on Saturdays, I do a 4-hour workshop. And on top of that, I also do regular, you know, this kind of stuff where I actually talk to people and live, in person, you know what I mean? And I go to Bible study. Somebody asked me the other day, how do you find time to do all this stuff? I said, I don't play golf. You'd be surprised how much time you can devote to other things if you stop doing some things. I'm not putting down anybody who plays golf or goes to baseball games or anything like that. And I do that because it's what gives me joy. And I happen to believe, because I remember saying to myself so many times, when am I going to stop worrying about what people think about me? When are the promises going to start not only happening to me, but not in the haphazard way they happen to me, where they come and they go so you know they're there in between the times you're waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning worrying about money? When am I going to stop saying to other people, I don't give a crap what other people think about me? When am I going to stop telling myself over and over again, I don't give a crap what they think about me? Usually after I've been thinking a lot about what other people are thinking about me. Because what you ultimately learn is that people that tell themselves and try to convince themselves that they don't care about what other people think about them, well, what you realize is that people that really don't care what other people think about them never say stuff like that. They say things like pass the ketchup, but they don't say that stuff. And since the big book does say I'm delusional, which means I can't separate the true from the false, my alcoholic thinking and my alcoholic life seems normal and comfortable to me. How can you be in AA for 10 years or 15 years or 20 years and still worry about whether people like you or not? Or worry about what people think about you. I mean, is that sobriety? Or is that some sort of weird bondage? You know, I'm an alcoholic because no money, no amount of money, no suit of clothes, no specific weight, you know, no woman, no car, no job, no nothing ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And if it worked for me today, the way it worked for me when I was 18 years old, I'd still be drinking it, but it stopped working for me. And the sad news, or the good news about my case, however you want to look at it, is it stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and I hurt a lot of people. Now, I can sit here and I can tell you this. One of the things you see is you see thousands of people when you come in. I go to the internationals. Everybody's staying sober. Everybody's doing great. And then one day you're sitting at a meeting and you see some guy with 20 years pick up a white chip. And one day you've got 25 or 30 years or 35 years or 40 years or 45 years sobriety. And all of a sudden you're getting calls from people that have 25 years and they want to commit suicide. And they got 30 years and they want to kill themselves. And they got 40 years and they want to drink. And all of a sudden you start saying that everybody's staying sober who has 20 years or less, but between 20 and 45, they're all dead. Or drinking, or they're not around, or you could shoot deer. And you start putting things together and you start realizing what Bill Wilson realized when he wrote the essay, Emotional Sobriety, The Next Frontier. And one of the things that is problematic, because one of the problems I have, you're not gonna believe this, but I have a problem with my brain. I once sponsored a guy named Tommy. He was a co-prosecutor to me. We did a lot of murder cases together, prosecutions. And I came into AA, and Tommy was like 3 years after that, and he called me up one day. He's another lawyer and a great guy. And he was sleeping on a probation officer's floor. He was all coked out and drunk and everything like that. He had his hair down here, and this guy used to be a jock, and he was supposed to be in court, and he couldn't be in court, and he didn't know what to do, and he was all scared and all screwed up the way we get. And he was calling me up because he was supposed to be in court, and he was worried about not getting there. And, you know, the condition he was in, so I called up the chief judge, and I straightened that deal out. And then when I picked him up, I took him to his first AA meeting. And he loved AA. I mean, the next day he cut all his hair. You know, he looked like the guy he looked like at the University of Florida when he was playing football. You know, he just completely changed. He went to tons of AA meetings and all that sort of stuff, and he completely changed. He loved AA. Everything was great. So one day I was at a room or something. I got a phone call. It was Tommy. And I said, "Hey, Tommy," and I sponsored him. He says, "Hey, Tommy. What's going on?" He says, "I think I have to leave AA." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry, what, Tommy, what'd you say?" He says, "I think I have to leave AA." I said, "What are you talking about? You got to leave AA. You love AA. You go to tons of AA meetings. They save your mind." He says, I know, but I think I have to leave." And I said, "Tommy, what are you, crazy? You've been telling everybody." He says, He whispered, he says, like somebody's gonna hear, he says, "I don't think I'm an alcoholic." I said, What are you talking about? For the last 3 months you're telling everybody you're an alcoholic. You said you're an alcoholic, you know, you're doing it. He says, I know, he says, but Russ, I just don't think I'm an alcoholic. He says, "Listen," he says, "Russell," I said, "I think I might be crazy." I said, "Tommy," he said, "What?" I said, "Tommy," he says, "What? What?" I said, "Listen, what?" He says, I said, "You can be both." The disease has nothing to do with drinking. It has nothing to do with cocaine. It has nothing to do with any of that stuff. I say that because it doesn't have anything to do with that stuff. Now, certainly, it's got the effect of having the disease will cause you to go up. You know, remember I said alcohol, you said no woman, no car, no amount of money, no sex ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks. Well, what you ultimately learned is when you get rid of the alcohol, all those other things, the worldly clamors, they work too. And they work just as bad. Worrying about what people think about it work just as bad as alcoholism. And that the drinking is just a symptom of the real disease. Now, just like you, me, everybody needs the don't drink and go to meetings. Don't drink even if your ass falls off. You know, I don't care what's happening. You could kill 15 rabbis and a priest and, you know, do whatever you want to do and, you know, have sex with squirrels. It doesn't matter. If you haven't had a drink, Russ, you're a success. And that is absolutely necessary to hear that stuff for the first 10, 15 years. And you know something? That'll keep people sober. Picking up medallions will keep people sober, but I'll tell you, won't keep you sober after 25 years. Won't keep you sober after 30 years. Won't keep you sober after 30, you know why? Because Bill Wilson said it. There was a time where I needed God and he came. But soon worldly clamors, the world, the women, the men, the money, the job, the prestige, blocked out his presence. How blind I had been. You see, here's the problem. You see, I'm real good at paragraphs and books. Oh, I've read the big book. I've read the 12 and 12. I've read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. You know, I've read all those things. I've read Bill Wilson's deal, you know, The Next Frontier. I'm good at books. I'm good at paragraphs. I'm a lawyer. You give me a paragraph, I'll find a loophole. I'm a lawyer and an alcoholic. You give me any paragraph, I'll find a loophole. You understand? I'll say, well, that's your problem. That's not my problem. Well, that's good for you. That's not good for me. But I'm really bad at sentences. There is one who has all power. That one is God. Find him now. Well, what the hell does that mean? Half measures avail you nothing. What does that mean? Burn that idea into every alcoholic's mind that he can get well as long as he trusts God and clean it. What does that mean? But we won't know you. We don't know that. God will tell you that because your real reliance has to be on him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave, which will be a godly fellowship. See to it your relationship with him is right. What the hell does that mean? And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You'll meet us in the fellowship of the Spirit. What the hell is the fellowship of the Spirit? I know the fellowship of A, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. What's the fellowship of the Spirit? There's maybe different qualifications for that. Maybe it has something to do with the sixth step. The one that separates out the men from the boys, that separates out the children from the adults. The women, you know, the women from the girls. Maybe there's some sort of separation that happens. Maybe that's the deal. What would that separation have to do with? It's the sixth step. What is the sixth step? Well, well-loved clergyman, that's interesting. A well-loved clergyman says it has to do with the difference between people that are in here to not drink, go to meetings, and people are in here to do whatever they can to get rid of any obstacle that stops them from growing in the image and likeness of their creator. Well, what the hell does that mean? What does that mean? All these things, God is everything, or he is not. Well, what the hell does that mean? What about money, property, and prestige? What about that stuff? When Bill Wilson wrote, when he was about 15 years sober, that's when he did that great conference approved. That little, now there's nothing wrong with the traditions. You know, I just say a few things just to get you upset with me. Because the greatest thing that could happen to me is know that 25% of you walks out here saying, who invited that son of a bitch? Because then I'll be living rent-free in your head for about, you know, a week or so until you decide whether you're going to drink over it or carry that resentment, or you're going to start writing something down, talking to your sponsor, and then realize that maybe there was some truth in that. And then 8 years from now, you'll come up to me and say, I used to hate you, but now I love you, you know, or something like that. But you see, here's the problem. I know that when I'm talking to a group like this, I know there's a guy out there that has 11 and a half years, and he's going to be drunk within a year, and he doesn't realize it. I know there's somebody out there who's got 18 years, and within a year or two, he's going to commit suicide, and he doesn't realize that. I know there are people out there that I know that Bill Wilson, after he got the 15 years and had that great meeting of everybody who had less than 15 years, that great business meeting, I know that a few years later, he was experimenting with LSD, which apparently didn't cure whatever he thought it was going to cure. And that's not unusual, because I've had friends that have gone out using Xanax, going to psychiatrists, everything like that, and you have too. And end up, you know, now he didn't drink. And I'm not putting Bill Wilson down. I'm not telling you anything Bill wouldn't say himself if he was getting up there and doing a workshop, because he wrote an essay on it, you know? So I know there's something more than not drinking and going to meetings, and I know the big book says that drinking is but a symptom of our problem. The real disease centers in our mind, not our bodies. So I'd like to talk to you about the real disease, which may not sound a lot like don't drink and go to meetings, but you go to enough meetings where they tell you don't drink and go to meetings, right? So you need to hear that again from me, you know? So maybe there's something else going on that's important. So I like to talk about that stuff. Just in case, because I've actually had people come up to me after meetings and says, you know, you're talking about me, I have 15 years and I'm miserable. One of the first things he says, so I just, it's the sentences that kill you. not the paragraphs. The paragraphs I can get around. I'm an alcoholic, I can make an excuse. I can say, hey, you work your program, I work my program. It's the sentences that I don't like. The great fact is this and nothing less, that you can be rocking in the fourth dimension, you can experience much of heaven, but God's got to become the central fact of your life. What does that mean, God becomes the central fact of your life? What does that mean? What does that look like? You must be convinced that he lives in your heart and mind in a way which is indeed miraculous, doing for you what you can't do. What does that mean? I just don't like the sentences. I want to change it around. I want to fix it. You know what I mean? And the real recovery is in the sentences. So Bill Wilson said in the Next Frontier, whenever he says, I've noticed a lot of old-timers, back then old-timers when he wrote this, he wrote this when he had about 20 years. He said, I've noticed there's a lot of old-timers. He had 20 years, he was going down the tubes, and he finally got himself out of it. He was going to a deep depression. He says, I've noticed there's a lot of old-timers, oldsters, 20 years or less, 23 years, that are not happy with their sobriety, and I'm one of them. I'm not going to do the whole thing for you. You should read it. You should read it. You should dissect it, you know? And he says that are not happy with their sobriety, you know? And I've noticed that. And then he says this line. This is the line he says. So if you don't like it, blame Bill Wilson. He said, perhaps they will be the spirit. He said, but there are some people, I call them the benighted ones, that soon who have broken through. I call them the benighted ones. He says, perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next major development in Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you know what the next major development is in Alcoholics Anonymous? There's no book. You're going to have to figure that out for yourself. But the bottom line is what's the point? What is the point? What makes the difference? What's the difference of being sober if you can't make a difference in people's lives? If you can't make a difference in a guy with 15 or 20 years or 25 years of sobriety who's not happy, who's still lonely, who's still worried about financial insecurity, who's worried about what other people think about him. What's the difference if you can't make the difference? What's the difference if you can't talk about God or make the difference because you're scared about what other people think about you? How does that work out? There is one who has all power, that one is God. See that your relationship with him is right. How does that work out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous where somebody will talk about God or ask a question about God and some presumed old timer, some guy with 10 years, who's scared the group might catch a virus and start talking about faithologues instead of drunkologues. How does that work out when he goes up to the person, the newcomer, and says to him, don't talk about that stuff, you're killing newcomers. How does that work out when Dr. Bob's sponsored Clarence Snyder and said to Clarence Snyder, first thing, right off the bat, it's right in Dr. Bob and Good Old Timers. I know you guys have read it. I know you guys have read the part in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which is about, doesn't it say, really have seen person fail, has thoroughly followed our path? That was written in 1939. The path was what happened between 35 and 39. So let me ask you this question, just a question, you know, just a fact. We got a conference-approved book called Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Dr. Bob says in the book, you got to follow our path. The whole book is about following their path. Dr. Bob says, the books we found absolutely essential were 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. When he was asked, what does first things first mean? He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be given to you. And I got about 50 different quotes, not to mention Bill Wilson, who said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease I got to keep talking about and telling other people. That's called the golden text of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what does all that mean, those sentences mean, when people are scared to even voice opinion or anything about God because somebody's going to hit them over the head and said, you're killing people? Maybe it has something to do with the difference between people staying sober for 15 years or staying sober for 40 years. I don't know. So I digress. Let's talk about me for a second, okay? I'm going to do it real fast because it's really hard to fit 45 years, actually 76 years because I'm 76, in like 20 minutes, okay? So I'm 18 years old and I inherit a little money. So I go and I buy a car, a gold Camaro with a Landau roof, which is really not cool these days, but it was cool back then, because I knew that that would change my life. Because I wake up every morning and said, if I only had this, I'd be okay. If I only had that, I'd be okay. If I only had this girl, I'd be okay. If I only had the money, I'd be okay. If I only had a job, I'd be okay. If I was only working, I'd be okay. See, there's one thing I know as an alcoholic. I know exactly what the problem is, exactly what'll work, and it'll work immediately. And that was a gold Camaro. And so I go and I put down all the money I have, because I believe me, my whole life is about spending money I don't have to buy crap I don't need to impress people I don't even like. So that's my whole life. Yeah, you're laughing, you don't know what it's like. But the bottom line is I get that gold, and I go, he says, well, I want the car. I give him the money. He says, no, we can't give you the car because we got to prep it. Prep it now, I'll take it now. He says, no, you come back tomorrow, we'll give it to you. So 9 o'clock that in the morning, I go back to the Chevy dealer. I get in that new car smell. It's got like about 100 miles on it or something like that. I drove it down Alton Road. I think the entire world is looking. I think every woman in China has me on her TV set. You know what I mean? I'm just waiting. I'm about 150 pounds lighter than I am now. I'm wearing a T-shirt. I got cigarettes. I'm smoking Lucky Strikes. I got the glasses on. It's over for me, you know what I mean? And I'm just waiting for the girls to just line up to get in my Camaro. And I stop at the light, and there's a car that pulls up next to me, and it's some old fart. Guy who sort of looks like me now, I suppose. And a 70-year-old guy sitting next to a Playboy bunny, good-looking blonde Playboy bunny, in a red convertible Cadillac. I just spent all the money I have on this Camaro because I knew it would change my life. I'm sitting here in my car. I have to look up, and I'm looking at him. He's looking at me. I'm looking at him. He's looking at me. I'm looking at the blonde. She's not looking at me. And I say to myself, in my mind, in my alcoholic mind, I say, why can't I have a car like that? Yeah, well, all I can tell you is the feeling lasted 3 blocks. The payments lasted 36 months. You know that. And that's the story of my life. If only I got this, if I get that, what if I lose this, what if I lose that, what if, you know, all that sort of stuff running around. And you know why I wanted that stuff to fix me? Because it works. It works like scotch. I'm sitting in one of my first AA meetings next to my sponsor, and I'm doing what I do in every bar I've ever drank at, because I was a bar drinker most of the time until the end. And I look at my sponsor, and I'm looking at the room, and I'm looking at it, and I said, man, look at that blonde over there in the front row. And my sponsor says, what did you used to drink, Russ? I said, I drank scotch, top shelf stuff. He says, you see that blonde? I said, yeah. He says, that for you, that blonde is a bottle of scotch with legs. And I saw it, yeah, I chuckled like you did. Man, that's kind of funny. But every time I saw a gal after that, this green bottle formed around her, you know what I mean? Like, did that deal with me, you know? That's the deal. So when I was about 20 years old, something like that. It's all fuzzy now, you know, because of the dementia. But in any event, this gal walks into one of my classrooms, and I was going to be a math professor and all that sort of stuff. I loved it. I love that stuff. She walks in. She's got legs up to here. She's a cheerleader, a gorgeous gal. I say to myself, if I only have this gal, I'll be okay. If I can only have that gal, I'll be okay. And I knew that, and I believed that, and you couldn't argue me out of that stuff. So I immediately insinuated myself into that gal's life. I did whatever I could to sort of slide in there. Her father was a doctor. Her mother was a lawyer. Her grandfather was a lawyer. I said, man, there's a group of professionals, you know, and I insinuated myself. I endeared myself to them. I did whatever I had to do because I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a smart guy, so I'm going to move everything I can to get what I want. And one day I wake up, I don't know how this happened, and I said to myself, I don't know why I'm going to be a math professor. I need to be a lawyer or a doctor, you know? And I went to medical school. They said, you know, you got straight A's and everything, you're doing all that stuff, but you don't have any biology. If you want to go to medical school, you got to get biology. You got to go for about 6 months, get some biology class. I said, That ain't never going to happen. I just have to be a professional. So I went to law school. I gave them $300. You're a lawyer, you know? So somebody asked me, well, why did you become a lawyer? And I say, as honest as I can, I said, well, I like Perry Mason, I like this, I like talking, I like this, all this stuff, and I believed it. Listen, let me tell you why I became a lawyer. I became a lawyer to get into a gal's pants. Now, looking at this crowd, I can tell you have a lot of integrity in here. You know what I mean? You would never do anything like that to, you know, get sex or romance or anything like that. You guys are obviously spiritual, not religious. You've evolved into spiritual beings, but I always had my eye on the material stuff of this world, the stuff that's going to kill me, the worldly clamors, which never stop 24/7, although your prayers may stop, you know? And especially if you get to go to groups where they never talk about this stuff. You know what I mean? So I got married to that gal. She's a very nice gal. Didn't do anything wrong. But after about 6 months, something was missing, you know? I got married too young. So I hung out at the bars. And I would sit there, and I would look at the girls. And I'd hang out with my friends, my drinking buddies. And I'd say to myself things like this. Man, if I wasn't married, I could have that redhead. Hey, if I wasn't married, I could have that brunette. If I was married, I could have this, I could have that. You know, because it was something I needed to do for me to make me feel okay. Because you see, I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. I was nothing but a nothing. I used to put something in my body to turn me into an almost. When you're a nothing, almost is top of the world. And one of the things that would turn me into an almost would be a woman that adored me and liked me. Or money in the bank. Or everything in this world. Because otherwise, without that, I was a piece of crap. That's the deal. Now I tell you how great I am, and I do all that stuff, but it was a piece of crap. And I would do that, and I'd stay in the bar until 4 o'clock in the morning, then I'd roll in with a wife and baby at home at 4 o'clock in the morning, and that went on for about 3 or 4 years. Never physically cheated on my wife. I'm proud of that. All I did was come in at 4 o'clock in the morning and not go home and just wish I could cheat on my wife. And I guess I didn't have the courage or what that was, but I would pat myself on the back on how virtuous I was. And then one day my wife said to me, she said, I just want you to know, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. 12 words. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. That's a sentence. That's a sentence. If you come home drunk one more time, I am leaving you. 12 words. That's a sentence. I'm bad at sentences. I drive 3 blocks. I stop at a light and I say to myself in my mind, what the hell did she mean by that? Now, when you can't figure out stuff like that, you're going to have a rough time in your life, you know? I didn't understand what she meant by that. I went to my bar. I got there at 4:30. I start feeling good as I pull into the bar. I sit down at the bar. I order my just one drink because I can only stay for one drink because Ronnie said, come on drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And I say, can I have a double scotch? So I'm on two already. And I take the double scotch and I whack it down because I didn't drink a lot, but I drank fast because I wanted to get that place where I really didn't care what other people thought about me. That's what booze did for me. I walk in the bar worrying about what the gal's going to think about me, what the guys, what the group's going to think about me. I take a couple of shots. I feel like I own the group. You know what I mean? I take this shot, and all of a sudden, Doug Hartman, one of my buddies, my drinking buddy, comes up to you and says, what's going on, Russ? He says, I got to leave. I said, what do you mean you got to leave? You just got here. I said, Ronnie said, if I come home drunk one more time, she's leaving me, and she was serious. He looks at me, he says, Russell, everybody loves you. He said, we all love you. I said, I love you. You're the greatest guy in the world. Your wife is crazy about you. She loves you. He puts his arm around me. She is never going to leave you. I'm thinking, well, hell, that's what I was thinking. That's why I like, that's exactly what I was thinking, you know? So I got home at 4 o'clock in the morning. That was the end of my marriage. And if you ask me why my marriage broke up, I say we were different people. We got married too young, all this sort of stuff. You know, when I took that drink, I was sober. You know, my wife said that, I wish I could tell you I did all these things, nasty things to people because I was drinking. It's alcohol's fault. I hurt many of the same people the same way cold tone sober. I had this disease before I started drinking, during the drinking, after the drinking. Most of the people I hurt at this point in my life, I disappointed because of the things that center in my mind, not my body. One day I ultimately get sober. Well, what happened to me is, to make a long story short, December 25th, 1985, December 25th, 1980, I get kicked out of a party. Some good-looking gal, you know, invited me to a party, so I'm up again. I'm a real man. And her father said, get rid of this guy. He's a drunk. And she kicked me out. So here I am all alone, 31 years old, you know, an attorney, but 31 years old, and I'm all alone on Christmas. And I knew I was the only one on Christmas that didn't have anybody. And I got a feeling it wasn't even, I can't even describe loneliness. It's a loneliness that you, it's like the whole world has somebody but you. And I turn on TV, it's a preacher. Preacher says to me, he does like a story or something. I don't remember what he said, but it was like one of these things like that we like to listen to. What it was like, what happened, what it was like, and of course the story ends up, and then I accepted Christ or somebody says, if you really are I really have a problem, and you want things, invite Christ to come into your life, and everything will work out. And I got down on my knees, in a nanosecond, I said the sinner's prayer right then, and you know what, and that was it. You know, which is not a big deal for some people in here, you know, but for a Jewish kid from Great Neck, New York, it was a big deal. I don't know, I guess you had to be there. I'd like to say three rabbis and a priest came down. We have some donuts here and a coffee. We got an AA meeting going. That's not what happened. I continued to drink. I got into a bad accident, almost killed myself and somebody else. Bottom line is that next thing I know, some guy comes to the hospital, my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, and he threw me a curve. I was going to explain to him, you know, I know coming from your going, you think you know what's going on, and you think I'm an alcoholic, but I said, let me tell you something, I don't really have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems, and pretty soon my problems are going to go away, and I won't have to drink anymore, so thank you very much, but he threw me a curve. He didn't talk to me about me, he talked to me about himself, and I identified him with him so much, and he said, listen, Russ, he says, you never have to drink. I never had anybody say you never had to drink. I thought I had to drink. He says, you never have to drink anymore if you don't want to. And you never have to feel this way if you don't want to. And I so much didn't want to feel that way and didn't want to drink, so I wound up in an AA meeting picking up a white chip. I stand up in front of 200 people. I pick up a white chip. It's almost like announcing that you need help. I didn't care, and I said, you need help. And so now I'm sponsored, and I got 3 months. I'm going to tell you just a couple of stories. You know, I mean, I got 400 stories. I'm going to tell you like three. You know what I mean? Because we don't have time for this. So that goes all through my sobriety, because all the stories have something to do with alcoholism. And what I've realized is that for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, what happens is God allows you to see based upon the things that happen to you in your life. You know, the little beatings he allows you to take. You learn the value of suffering, the things that happen in your life. And you know, with us, they have to happen over and over and over and again. We don't learn our lesson like one time. And you know, it allows you to see what alcoholism really looks like. And then when you say what it really looks like and you want to get rid of it, then you got another 3 years to go or 4 years to go. You know what I mean? You don't give it up gracefully. So now I married the lovely Mrs. Spatz there, gorgeous, 3 months sober, she's a beautiful young lady. And all of a sudden I realized that I'm broke. You know what I mean? I got $50 in the bank, I haven't paid the rent in 3 months or 2 months or something like that, and I'm scared crapless, you know what I mean? What am I gonna do? I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Where's the money gonna come from? What am I gonna do? I'm not gonna drink, you know what I mean? What am I gonna do? Well, what am I gonna do? I'm not gonna say anything to my group, not that I care. I'm not gonna tell my group that the big shot lawyer has $50 in the bank and he's broke. I said, not that I cared what they thought about me, you know what I mean? I'm past that, you know what I mean? So I finally let slip with my sponsor. I say, Bob, I say, I don't have any money. I says, I'm broke. I tell him the whole story. He says, Russell, I can fix that. I said, really? He says, absolutely. Don't even worry about it. We can fix that. I said, man, I get my cash is mid out. My sponsor's gonna give me a couple $1,000. I love this AA thing. You know what I'm talking about? And so after the meeting's over, he says, okay, let's fix that money thing. He says, okay. So he marches me over to the coffee pot. He starts showing me how to make coffee. You know? He says, you're gonna be the coffee maker for this group. I'm thinking, I'm not sure I explain myself real well in this deal. I mean, I love AA, but we're talking money here, you know what I mean? And he shows me how to set up the chairs to make the coffee, and the next day I didn't want to go, and I didn't want to go because no money came in, and I was broke, and I was depressed. I wasn't depressed. I was very depressed, you know what I mean? Because we don't get depressed. We got very depressed, which is a good excuse for missing meetings. But I had to go. You know why? Because I had to make the stupid coffee. Because if I didn't go and make the coffee, what would they think about me? You know what I mean? So it was like spiritual jujitsu. So I went and I made the coffee for 3 more months. And somehow the money came in and everything was okay. And it all worked out. And some idiot came up to me and says, you know, I'll make the coffee. I said, I'm the coffee maker. Who the hell appointed you? You know, get your own coffee. Get your own groove, you son of a gun. You know? So about 10 years sobriety, I started, unlike Bill Wilson, it took me 10 years before I hit a wall. So if any of you ever hit a wall and you know and you're not drinking, you go to meetings and you double up on your meetings and everything like that, and it's like a band-aid, it's keeping you sober and you're not drinking, but there comes the anxiety again, there comes the worry again, there comes the loneliness again, you can't understand why it's not working for you because you've been working for it for 10 lousy years, 15 years. So I went up to somebody and I asked what they thought the problem was, and I told him everything I was doing, and he says, you know, Rush, you need to go to Bible study. You need to start getting God in your life. You're getting everything out of your groups and everything out of the book except God. And God said, we become the central factor of your life. And I said, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. He says, I'm spiritual, not religious, because I learned from AA that Bible no, religion no, and everything like that, that's all no. You know, it's all about doing the steps and everything like that. But the steps are all about the first thing they say. The first thing they said, there is one who has all the power. That one is God, and you find him now. Because in the book, in chapter 8, it says, this agnosticism, this atheism has to be abandoned. And in the book, what it says, of a mere code of morals, better philosophy of life, even the step would get us over, we'd sober along, says, therefore we had to talk about God, something that would relieve all your problems. He says, here's where agnostics have a real problem. So if somebody comes up to you and starts beating you over the head because you're talking about God or thinking about God, he's an agnostic. Because that's in the definition of an agnostic, a person that gets uncomfortable when you talk about God. I don't care what he says about how he loves God or all that sort of stuff and that kind of deal. Of course, that's just an opinion. You can ignore that opinion or not. We'll see what happens. You get to live your life. So the bottom line is, I only say that as that's the path I went on. I'm not imposing anything on any of you guys. You do whatever you want to do, but I never stopped going to meetings. I doubled up on my meetings. I've always been going to 3 meetings. On the way to the office, I'd go to a 7 o'clock meeting. I go to a 12 o'clock meeting. I go to a 5:30 meeting on the way out. I was doing meetings like you do the Zoom meetings before Zoom. You understand what I mean? I never abandoned, but I just added on more. I just added on more, and I took away the golf. You know what I mean? God actually did become the centerpiece of my life, the central fact. One day, I had about a little more sobriety, and I got real mad with my lovely wife, if you can believe that. I went up to my sponsor, Joe Snyder, at the time. I said, he says, I got to get a divorce. He says, what do you mean you got to get a divorce? I said, I told him everything. He said, I took 20 minutes. I told him specifically what she said. And then she said this, and then she said that, and then she said this. I have 3 kids now, 3-4 kids. Then she said that. I didn't come in here to take that. It was clear what the problem was. It was clear I was alky right. That means you got to be killed if you don't understand because you're so stupid, you know? I was right. And so my sponsor said to me, he said, so why are you upset? Because I always got stupid sponsors. let me tell you something, Doug Hartman would have understood. They're not smart like the guys in the bar. He says, well, what do you mean? He says, why are you upset? I said, Joe, I just spent 20 minutes telling you specifically what she did and what she said and what she's going to do. I said, yeah, I heard all that. I said, but why are you upset? I said, I just told you why I'm upset. He said, that's not why you're upset. I said, what do you mean that's not why I'm upset? Russell, that's just not why you're upset. And then he shut up. I said, you mean, that's not why you're upset. Well, what about when she, that's not why you're upset. Well, what, that's not why you're upset. And then he shut up. And I said to him, I said, so you sat there, didn't say a word. And I had something in my mind saying, I think this guy is not telling you something. And so I said, well, you know why I'm upset? He said, oh, yeah, I know why you're upset. You know why I'm upset. Oh, man, it's so clear. I said, well, you're going to tell me why I'm upset? He says, I don't know. I mean, do you really want to know? I said, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? And he said, listen, I'll never forget this line. I may forget a lot of lines. This is like 35 years ago. He said, listen, stupid, which was his nickname for me. Listen, stupid, You're upset because you're upsettable. I said, what is this, like Zen AA or something? You know, and you know, sometimes my wife does some stuff, you know, but it just doesn't bother me anymore. It doesn't bother me anymore. And you know, when I started taking this stuff seriously and started trying to understand the sentences and hanging around with people that were understanding the sentences, as opposed to not drinking, go to meetings, the sentence, you can do both. As soon as I started to understand, you know, one day the day came and I wasn't worried about what people are thinking about me. And even though I had money problems, I've been rich, I've been poor, rich is better, you know what I mean? But it's not that you never have the problems anymore, it's not that you don't get concerned about it, but they don't rule my life. You know why? Because I have something called faith in God. I know all things work for good for those who love the Lord, and somehow he's protect me, and he's never failed. Where I thought it would never go well for me, my life was going to be over, terrible things were going to happen, instead of having to turn it over, I turn it over all the time. Turn it over. A week I'd worry about it, then I turn it over. And he said, what about that? He says, I turned it over. And then one day I started living a turned over life. In the morning I'd be thinking about him. In the afternoon I'd be thinking about him. Driving my car, I'd be thinking about him. I wouldn't be thinking about the girls or the money, I'd be thinking about him. At night, going to sleep, I'd think about him. I'd wake up again thinking about him. I'd be talking about him. And you want to know something? All of a sudden, I stopped worrying about everything that was going on. I stopped worrying about the world and the things of this world and things I thought I needed. And what I started doing is I started thinking about him. Then you know what happened? I started talking about him at meetings and whenever I would talk. Because, you know, Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, cure me of this terrible disease. I got to keep talking about him and telling other people. So whatever that thing is that Bill Wilson had, I caught that. And the worldly clamors caught me too. And that's what happened to me, like it happened to Bill Wilson. But I pulled out of it. And you know how? Because I got sick enough and bad enough where I started doing stuff that people in A wouldn't have wanted to do. But of course people in A don't want to do it because we ain't exactly well people's anonymous. Last story. Current events. So this is a true story. This has to do with my wife. And she can't deny this because I have witnesses. So I walk, about a year ago, I walk out of my my bedroom, and I walk in the morning, just woke up, and I walk to where the front, into the living room, dining room, and my wife is coming in from outside with this big box delivered by Amazon. Big box, it's like this high, this wide, and it says industrial strength power steam cleaner, or something like that. You know, for the patio to clean off, you know, stuff like that. So, I haven't lost all sense. I immediately, price and right, I said, that's $400 to $500. I got to earn this amount of money every month in order for us to keep afloat. I'm now $500 in the hole. It's okay, I'm fine. I say, oh, you bought a steam cleaner. She says, yes, I bought a steam cleaner. Okay, and I've got like 44 years or whatever it is. And then she goes outside again, and she brings in the exact same box, God is my witness, steam cleaner, and brings it in. Now I'm down 1,000. So I say, so far no amends is necessary, you understand? I say, oh, you bought two. She said, yes, I bought two. And then I say, so why'd you buy two? And she says, as God is my witness, they learned this from Al-Anon. How to torture your husband so that he has to make an amends. So I said, why'd you buy two? And she says, can't make this stuff. Because I wanted two. And I'm just about to say the next line, which I have to tell you, has an F-bomb in it. I swear it did. It did. But I think it was appropriate. It had an F on it, but you know what happened? The Lord captured that sucker, and it put a thought in my mind. You know what the thought was? Russ, you just got the best answer you're ever going to get from this woman. Move on. Because I learned something about the 10th step. If you don't do stupid crap, if you don't do stupid crap, you don't have to make amends. Okay? So I move on. 3 days later, I go outside. We're about to do that 4-hour workshop. I have a bunch of guys over. We're going to go on Zoom. I got a big screen TV. We're going to do that deal. We got about 80, 90 people from all over the planet, and we're going to do that thing. My wife's out there with a steam cleaner, just standing there. I say, what's going on? She says, steam cleaner stopped working. I say, well, why don't you just get the other steam cleaner? She goes, I knew you couldn't let it go, could you? Well, for your information, I bought that for my cousin. Now are you happy? And I'm like laughing. This is happening in front of my, I got witnesses, sponsees and stuff. I said, man, she was holding on to that hand grenade for 3 days. 3 days she's holding on to that hand grenade. And now it's just a story. You know what I mean? We didn't have to get divorced over it or anything like that. And that's the deal. So that's the deal with my life. So that, you see, you know, none of those stories have anything to do with alcohol. But they have everything to do with alcoholism. They have everything to do with alcoholism. They have everything to do with what gets you upset these days, what bothers you, why you can't sleep at night, what you keep on thinking about. They have everything to do with alcoholism. I wish I could say alcohol caused all my problems, you know. I probably would have blown my brains out if I didn't have alcohol up until I was 20, 21, 30 years old, because the only thing alcohol allowed me to do is live with my sorry ass self while I was doing it and tell myself lies. That's the only thing alcohol had to do with my deal, and that's the deal with me. And I got nothing more to say to you all, so thank you very much. Thank you.